Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, eat beef, eat beef. It's a mighty good food. It's a great A meal when I'm in the mood. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Volkbaum.
I'm Joe McCormick.
And that was the Reverend Horton Heat. Coming up next. No, we wanted to talk about the future of protein, right? This idea of protein and the various sources that we depend upon for protein, everything from beef to pork to chicken to plant protein to, well, I don't want to spoil it. We'll get there. But I wanted to talk about how the way we get protein can make a huge impact on the world around us, right?
Well, why are we talking about this in the first place? I mean, if we've got perfectly good four-legged sources of food running around, why would we want anything else?
Well, one of the reasons is because those perfectly good four-legged sources of food put a pretty hefty toll on the environment, particularly when we're needing to produce it in the amounts that we require.
And particularly if we are talking about meat of the beef variety.
Yeah, that one is the worst of the worst when it comes to environmental impact. And by environmental impact, we mean everything from clearing enough ground for grazing, which, you know, as our demand for meat increases, obviously the demand for land for cattle increases. That can impact everything from rainforest to other delicate ecosystems. And we could end up losing lots of other valuable resources in the process and causing other issues. Then you've got things like greenhouse gas emissions, which particularly with beef are a real problem. Things like methane. Cows produce a lot of it.
And but it's not just emissions directly from the cows.
No, no.
Like that when you produce a certain amount of meat, yeah,
right.
There's a huge backstory to that meat and yes. All of the different things that have had to happen to make that meat available to you add up over time.
Right. And, you know, first of all, I want to say that the amount of meat that we are eating is on the rise. The world's total meat supply as of 1961 was like 71 million tons. As of 2007, it was more like 284 million tons.
Whoa.
Yeah. It doubled over that period. But in the developing world, it actually rose twice as fast. Which basically just means that as people come into better economic situations, they consume more meat.
Yeah, there is a correlation between your financial status and the amount of meat you typically consume. You being societies out there,
That's right, because you don't actually eat meat, do you, Jonathan?
I don't eat mammals. I do eat fish and fowl, but I do not eat mammals. It has nothing to do with an ethical situation in my case, although there are plenty of people out there who make their decisions based on their own personal beliefs and ethics, and I have nothing against that. But in my case, it's because my wife had a bad experience with food poisoning in college, and due to that, she associates meat with feeling not well, feeling sick, and so she swore it off, and she hasn't really had any since then. And so when I was dating her, I started to phase it out of my own diet. And in the process, that means that over the last 18 years or so, I've maybe had meat maybe five times.
Wow.
So meat from the sense in the sense of mammals. There are other types of animals I will hunt down and tackle and chew on. Ostrich, by the way, delicious.
It is delicious. Fantastic. I think most things are delicious. You know, the entire does it have a face, does it have a mother kind of scale has, I'm like, I'm really sorry, but adorable creatures are pretty tasty, and
right.
I can't really, you know.
Yeah, we have to guard our furry friends whenever Lauren comes to the office. That's not true.
It's true. She does eat puppies.
Okay.
No, what? Right. No. That's
no. Just kittens.
No. Only kittens.
Only fuzzy bunny rabbits.
Okay.
Right. No. Well, fuzzy bunny rabbits. Hey.
We cannot make jokes about eating kittens. We're on the internet.
Okay, that's true. Lauren would never hurt a kitten.
We will be digitally lynched. But I do actually limit my meat intake for some of these environmental reasons.
Right. And we've mentioned a couple, greenhouse gases and rainforest, but it goes well beyond that too, right? I mean, we're talking about, think how much of the world's grains are dedicated to feeding the cattle that we depend upon for our beef.
Right, right. The number that I've seen is that it takes about 8 pounds of feed to create 1 pound of beef.
Yeah,
for consumption.
That's a lot of resources to create that meat that could be used for other things.
Such as feeding people,
exactly. And then there's also how much water is necessary, not only to water the cow, so that the cow has enough water to live, but from everything else that's involved in the meat industry, from growing that grain in the first place to all the different production stages of meat. This requires a lot of energy resources, stuff that we could be using for other things, and it's truly unsustainable.
Right. That world consumption of meat is expected to double again by 2050. And these environmental issues are not small. One study in 2007 by the National Institute of Livestock and Grassland Science in Japan estimated that for every kilogram or 2.2 pounds of beef, It's responsible for the equivalent amount of carbon dioxide emitted by the average European car going 250 kilometers, or what's that, like 155 miles?
That's a significant environmental
issue. That's huge. It's enough energy to burn a 100-watt light bulb for 20 days. And when you get into the kind of numbers that we're looking at,
yeah. Right. As you know, one of the things we want to try and solve, obviously, I would imagine most people would want to solve is a problem like world poverty. I mean, that's a huge, huge problem. And obviously, we don't want people living in poverty. It's a terrible thing. But as people do get more access
to more
affluent, then they do tend to consume more meat. So if we were able to find some environmentally friendly way to produce that meat, and we'll talk more about that in a little bit, but let's assume that we could find an environmentally friendly way that at least had a much lower impact upon the environment than the conventional method of growing beef. A lot of the concerns I've read, or a lot of the criticisms I've read, are not that it wouldn't have a positive impact on the environment. That part seems to be pretty much cut and dry, that this would be good news for the environment. The problem is that it would not actually go to necessarily combating world hunger, at least not directly. And the reason for that would be because the issue of access to meat, it's not access, it's the price, right? It's a poverty problem. It's not just an access problem, because by a lot of estimations, we produce enough food in the world right now to feed everybody.
To easily feed everyone.
Yeah, for a 2,000 calorie a day diet, we have enough to handle everybody. But not everyone has access to that food, not because of the actual access problem, but because of the financial problem. So while we're going to be talking in a little bit about some alternate ways of getting at beef besides raising an animal and slaughtering it, that doesn't necessarily mean that suddenly we've solved the world hunger problem. That's a much more complex issue.
Although once we can free up more of that land to go to production of a more sustainable food source, I think that would go.
That could help.
That could certainly help.
It all depends upon how we dispense with that.
Sure.
So if we're talking about the future, I think we need to talk about alternatives.
Okay.
Because you do have this issue, this lingering issue that is hard to overcome, and the issue is people want to eat meat.
Sure.
They just want it, and mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to just tell them, no, you need to eat beans and grains and not eat meat.
Right. Well, it's tasty, and it's always been a status symbol, I think.
Yeah.
Culturally, so.
So is there a way we can come up with something that will at the same time satisfy this need people have without causing the same problems that meat does?
Right. Right.
Are there real alternatives?
Well, you know, for a long time, at least people who absolutely love eating meat would have said no. For example, plant proteins. Plant proteins, we can get protein from plants. There are certain plants that produce the proteins that are necessary for us that you could switch to those and receive a lot of the benefits you would receive from eating various types of meat.
They do contain slightly different combinations of proteins and slightly different fats, and it's very there are a lot of questions in the nutrition industry about whether one kind of protein, whether is more complete than another, or whether right. a certain kind of fat is healthier than another.
In other words, like none of the choices that we're about to talk about are necessarily like you should
like
swear
off. One-to-one replacements.
Right, right. There might be combinations of diet that would be necessary for you to have a healthy adult diet that is going to provide you all the nutrients and proteins that you need. That also is not going to have any detrimental health effects. But, you know, in the past, we would say things like, soy-based meat replacement, things that soy burgers or tofu or, tempeh, which is part of that's made from fermented soy. Tofu is unfermented soy. But then there's a big controversy about the health benefits and drawbacks of soy right now. I mean,
right. We talked in our last episode about GMOs, and if you thought that was a big fighting issue,
yeah.
then you have not read the forums
right.
on soy.
The GMO can be considered a kerfuffle compared to the chaotic arguments that happen within the soy community, and the people who are absolutely for the use of soy and those who say that it is the most poisonous thing you could put in your body. Really, the science is kind of still developing on this. There are conflicting reports from everything from the way soy can impact your ability to absorb minerals to whether it's a carcinogen or it prevents cancer, right?
Oh, right. Well, okay. So the thing with soy is that it contains isoflavones, which are...
That sounds delicious.
That's no flavor saver.
It's...
Isoflavones. That sounds like a delicious frozen treat.
That... They're chemically similar to estrogens. So I'm not sure what kind of ice cream stand you've been going to, but I don't think it's quite the same thing. Two major types in particular found in soy can act like estrogen in the body, which means that they bind to estrogen receptors, which can spur estrogen receptor positive tumor growth. Can sometimes in some studies. I mean, you know, it's anytime that you're talking about nutrition, you're talking about individuals, all of whom have a different genetic makeup, a different history, a different environment.
Right.
They're eating other things differently. You know, no one in any of these studies is being constricted to precisely the same diet.
So what you're saying is there are a lot of variables.
Yes.
And there are other studies that have shown that these same sort of elements can actually have a limiting factor on tumor growth. So there's conflicting information within the science itself, and it may very well be that it's either a duration thing, like it's how long you have been consuming this particular stuff, whether or not it has this initial boost to, and usually it's for people who are already undergoing cancer treatments that are really at high risk here. But there's a possibility that at first there's a negative impact and then over time there's a positive impact. There's a possibility that it's an amount thing, but we don't really know. The problem is that there are people on either side of the argument who have taken very concrete stances on this. And so there's not a lot of dialogue in the middle. It's a lot of, you know, firm quote unquote facts on either side. The problem is the facts
don't match.
They contradict one another in some cases.
Okay, so I understand how things like tofu and tempeh and Satan,
yeah, which
and stuff
which
like
in
that.
This case Satan is which
yeah, Satan
which,
yeah.
Satan. Okay, so we're talking about protein made from wheat. It's essentially gluten in that case,
right? Things like this can
it's
be
not,
a
not talking
good
about the dark one.
Can be a good or maybe bad. We don't know. Can at least be some kind of nutritional substitute for meat.
But you wanted an actual like.
Well, I'm asking. I mean, how close have we gotten to really replacing meat? I mean, creating a plant-based product that actually has the ability to trick the mouth into thinking
gotcha.
It's
so,
meat.
So not just something that would provide protein, but something that would give you the same experience as if you were eating actual meat. That's what you're asking, right?
Yeah.
Well, there are several companies that have been working on this using plant proteins and various approaches to create fibers to create a kind of meat substitute that's supposed to mimic meat so closely that people who are meat eaters have said, you know, it tastes meaty. It has that mouth feel of meat. It sounds, I hate using the phrase mouth feel, but that's the way everyone talks about it.
Keep using it.
Yeah. Well, the mouth feel of meat. So you know how it feels when you take a big old bite of a juicy burger. Well, a lot of
us. It's part of what the eating experience is.
Yes, it is. It is.
Right.
There's that the texture, the firmness, all of these things play a factor in what we consider the ideal experience for eating a particular type of food, whatever that food might be. It doesn't have to be meat. It could be whatever.
Right. And for me personally, a lot of these plant-based proteins wig me out the closer that they try to get to meat, because it's kind of this uncanny valley of meat effect.
Right, where it's almost but not quite like whatever it is you're trying to
and
have.
And it's kind of terrifying. Like any time that chicken has an apostrophe in it, I don't really want anything to do with it. I would much rather just eat an actual animal.
Like I don't care for a lot of veggie dogs, for example, because they just don't really remind me at all of what hot dogs tasted like. And it's been a long time since I've had one. So, but even then, I'll take a bite and I'm like, yeah, this is not it.
Not so much.
Not it. I had enough hot dogs back when I ate meat to know that this is not the right taste and not the right texture. But there are companies out there that have been using plant proteins to create really, really compelling products that really, apparently, according to people who eat meat, taste and feel like meat. And those companies are, well, one of them is Beyond Meat.
Beyond Meat.
Yeah. It's, it was the sequel to Son of Meat, which of course was the lesser known, successor to the great movie
Reanimator.
Reanimator. That was way down the line.
No.
I'm talking about meat. Just meat.
Just
meat. Son of Meat. Beyond Meat. No, Beyond Meat is a company that was founded by, Ethan Brown. And Ethan Brown grew up on essentially a dairy production farm and went into the clean energy sector before he decided he wanted to find a way to create a vegan friendly option of using plant proteins in a way that mimicked meat so that it would be indistinguishable. And so he joined up with some researchers and they started working on this company. They got some funding from some big names. The founders of Twitter ended up sinking quite a bit of money in this, investing money into it, because it actually has been very successful. And according to the reviews I've read, the products that they create they really do taste and feel like meat. So it seems to have a very positive response. Other companies that also are doing the same thing include Match, which is a company that came out of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. They mostly supply areas in the Midwest. You can also apparently order their stuff online. And then there's another one called Plenty, P-L-E-N-T-I, which is out of the Netherlands. And all three of these companies, again and again, when I was doing research, were the ones that were mentioned as the companies that were making products that really did feel like a true meat substitute, not just a different way to get your protein that mimics the shape of other things. Like, we've seen veggie burgers everywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's, often a veggie burger can be really tasty, but mm-hmm. it's not something like, you don't bite into it and think, oh yeah, that tastes like hamburger to me. It's just like, this is a different experience, but I like it. It's just not a burger.
Not the same.
There's a burger place here in Atlanta that I think just has an absolutely delicious veggie quinoa burger. But I like about it that it's really good because it doesn't taste like it's trying to be fake beef. It's just
it's a different kind of food. Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
All of the non-meat protein products that I like. I like lentils and I like tofu, actually. I mean, mostly when it's deep fried, but isn't that true of everything?
Yeah.
So,
chicken fried tofu is a delicious, delicious thing.
It is. So if we're looking for something that, let's say that you don't believe in this whole plant, eating plants thing.
Right. Let's say that you have just decided that while close is good, it's not good enough. You have got to have a beef burger. Is there any way of making a beef burger or making any kind of meat, any sort of beef product or meat product in general? Is there any way of doing that doesn't have this hugely negative environmental impact?
Oh, yes.
Joe.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Fill us in, you sinister son of a whatever. Go.
So this year, in London at an expo in August 2013, a Dutch researcher named Mark Post from the University of Maastricht cooked up a burger patty.
All right.
Like you do.
Without killing a cow. That was made without killing a cow.
Wait, are you telling me there's just like a cow wandering around the Netherlands that's missing like a hamburger-sized hole in its side?
No, it is not a cow that you have just cut a burger out of. No,
okay.
This is what's called in vitro meat.
All right. So what does that mean?
In vitro, well, it comes from in glass. It's the idea of meat produced in a lab. So it's not just taken from a cow, but it is actually grown from a sort of cow culture.
Okay, so what they did was they took essentially a biopsy of a cow.
Yeah, so all organisms have these things called stem cells.
Right.
These are they're pluripotent cells that can mature into different types of body cells. So you have stem cells that can make the cells that occur in a muscle. And,
sure.
Of course, the muscle is the part of the cow that you want to eat for beef.
Right.
So an interesting thing that this researcher decided to try was to take a biopsy from living cow without killing the cow,
mm-hmm.
put it in a culture in the laboratory, and get the stem cells to grow tiny strips of beef.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it was a painstaking process that took a long time and many, many cultures. But eventually what he did was he grew enough tiny strips of beef to mash them all together with some fat cells
into
and make a burger, real beef burger.
Gosh, that's kind of crazy. So wait, two questions.
Mm-hmm.
How much did this cost?
The first one cost more than $300,000 to make.
Yeah, was it supersized?
It's a very expensive burger.
Okay.
But, of course, it's that expensive because it's never been done before.
Right.
And it's actually been estimated. I've got this interesting paper here. It's called Environmental Impacts of Cultured Meat Production, and it was a scientific paper from 2011 that predicted, or it offered comparisons of the predictions of the eventual cost of producing lab cultured beef with that of conventionally grown meat.
Right.
And the differences are pretty huge. Like, for example, when it compared their estimations for cultured meat to European raised beef, their findings were that there was a 7 to 45% lower energy use, 78 to 96% lower greenhouse gas emissions,
wow,
99% less land use, and 82 to 96% less water use.
So the demand on resources would be way lower if we went to some sort of in vitro, assuming we could scale it up to a point where it made economic sense.
Yeah. Sure.
Right.
Obviously, if it never made economic sense, it would never happen because we just wouldn't be able to afford it.
But this is a big thing because the problem with getting people to change their diets is they don't want to.
Right. Well,
I mean,
no, beef is tasty.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that also kind of leads me to my second question. Did either of you see any of the reaction to what it tasted like?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I read some reviews. They were mixed. I mean, essentially, I got the impression that this was not the kind of burger that you would be satisfied with if you paid top dollar for it in a restaurant. But it essentially
like
tasted burger-like.
Burger-ish?
So I get the feeling the general idea was we're getting there.
Gotcha.
Like, this was enough like a burger. I mean, it did taste like beef.
Mm-hmm.
It was getting there. And, it didn't just taste like beef. It was beef.
Right.
Again, to reiterate, this isn't some weird synthetic thing. This is the same protein you'd be eating if you killed a cow and took it out.
Right.
It's just made without killing the cow.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that the initial reaction from most people I've talked to when it comes to this concept is one of revulsion.
Yeah.
That it's, you know, that's not natural, therefore, you know, it's
bad.
It's bad, or I can't stand the thought of eating something that was grown in a lab. And I sit there and I think, so you don't want to eat something that was grown, but it's exactly the same stuff. You know, if you were to look at the materials, it's exactly the same stuff as you would get if you had raised and killed an animal. So, it surprises me in a way to think that you would have this kind of immediate reaction, but I guess it's just one of those things where it's so different from what we've come to expect that there's that reaction where it's like, that's not normal, therefore I don't want it.
Yeah, and so there are a lot of benefits that this kind of meat could actually provide. So it's obviously got the edge on energy investiture and all that.
Yeah, water resources.
It doesn't have the problem of you've got to put all this grain into it.
Right.
The way that normal conventionally raised beef does.
So you could actually repurpose that grain for other reasons.
To feed humans, people. For example.
Yeah. This is really interesting. I just read this today. There's the idea that, well, creating beef like this, you'd actually have a whole lot more control over the nutritional content of the beef. Because in this culture, you grow muscle cells and fat cells separately. What you could actually do, and this I thought was a really cool idea, was replace the normal saturated fat that occurs in a hamburger patty with something much healthier like omega-3 fatty acid.
Interesting.
And that you could get like a hamburger that would be very low in cholesterol.
Yeah.
Which is not the case with hamburgers today.
True. Right, right.
Interesting. Well, that's pretty cool. So
there's also, one more cool thing I thought was the idea that this could definitely lead to a decrease in food poisoning and zoonotic diseases.
Interesting. Mm. So I have a question for you then. So let's say that, we got the in vitro beef solution and we've talked about plants as a source of protein. Can you think of anything else that could be a good source of protein?
Can I? How many legs are we talking here?
Six.
Sorry, I wrote that same joke into the script.
Yeah, I made the same joke about the supersize me in the script too, so it's okay.
Okay, here's the thing. Lots of people are talking about the future involving eating insects, and they're not joking.
Right.
Okay, well, the thing is that the present involves eating insects. Over 2 billion people on the planet eat insects as a relatively regular part of their diet.
Yeah.
Right. Those of us raised on a Western diet, it seems completely alien to us. It's one of those things that it's one of those easy factors where you show someone like a bowl of insects or whatever that haven't even been prepared yet for eating.
And we make game shows out of it.
Yeah. It's considered a punishment, right? And you lost, you have to eat, or fear factor. Now you've got to eat a cricket and not keeping in mind, ignoring the fact that this is something that in other parts of the world is a regular part of a diet.
Yeah. For example, the UN Food and Agriculture Organization is really pushing this idea. And one of the reasons is that if you want to get animal protein in your diet, insects are a much, much more environmentally sustainable and resource efficient way to do it.
Right. As compared to that 8 pounds of feed that it takes to create 1 pound of beef that I mentioned earlier, it would only take 2 pounds of feed to create 1 pound of, food, insect
protein.
Insect protein. Yeah.
Yeah. And insects are actually very healthy.
Low in fat, high in protein, high in fiber.
Healthy for you to eat or just generally healthy? Like you've got a bunch of health conscious bugs out there.
They're wonderful. There's this misperception that bugs are like dirty.
Right.
I think we have this idea that obviously, like the cockroach on your floor is dirty. You don't want to eat that.
Y'all, let me tell you about some pigs. You think that bacon's delicious? Let me tell you about some pigs.
But insects actually, I mean, yeah, they're full of good protein. That you can get good iron from insects.
Mm-hmm.
You can get all kinds of nutrients that we need are abundant in insects like locusts and caterpillars and beetles that are already popular delicacies in cuisines around the world. And essentially all there is a gross out gap.
Right.
People who aren't used to this just need to be able to get used to the idea.
They emit considerably fewer greenhouse gases, require little to no land, could consume waste products rather than, needing to have, specific crops grown for them.
From what I understand, there's quite a few of them.
Oh, there's so many of them. Is it like there's 200 million insects for every person on Earth?
Yeah.
Is that right?
That's a buffet.
Yeah. There's no problem with supply.
Right. So, in other words. So question for you, Joe. Would you eat a bug?
Well, I think if you just offered me a whole bug, I would admittedly be grossed out about it. But the other part of me would be, I would want to be like, okay, I want to try this, you know. I've never had a bug, but one thing that does encourage me is the idea that you wouldn't just be necessarily like eating whole bugs.
Right.
I mean, we're talking about insect protein, which could be processed in the same way that any other protein is processed. If you have a ground chicken patty, chicken nugget, or a, you know, or a hamburger made out of ground beef, you could similarly have ground insect protein being put into different food products to give you that healthy protein without, you know, the kind of the gross out factor of the bug, if that's a problem for you.
Yeah, right. It would be like a cricket meal, like an almond meal or flax meal is sold.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it wouldn't necessarily, just like, you know, when you're having a hamburger, it's not like you're walking up to a cow and taking a bite out of it.
Right.
You know, same sort of thing.
Okay, you're not.
If you're not Lauren.
I think somebody in here has actually eaten bugs before.
Yeah, well, I have never voluntarily eaten a bug, but I've also ridden on the back of motorcycles. So.
I should qualify. I'm pretty sure I eat tons of cockroaches all the time just because they crawl into my mouth while I'm asleep.
Yeah, there's more nightmares for me.
Well,
thanks.
Was lovely. I did want to point out that the FDA, for one, has a allowable amount of bugs that can be contained within given food products without being considered adulterated. And I'm going to quote a few things for you here, and all of these I want you to understand are even going above these levels would be considered non-hazardous. It would merely be considered not, for example, frozen raspberries anymore. You would have to label it as frozen raspberries plus larva. The only difference would be in an aesthetic purpose. So frozen raspberries, an average of 4 or more larvae per 500 grams, or an average of 10 or more whole insects or equivalent per 500 grams. Macaroni, an average of 225 insect fragments or more per 225 grams in 6 or more samples. Tomato puree, average of 20 or more fly eggs per 100 grams or 10 or more fly eggs and 1 or more maggots per 100 grams.
Yeah, okay, so
here at Forward Thinking, we think about the future.
Yeah.
And the future is insect fragments.
I would like to say for the record that I will not be allowing my wife to listen to this podcast because she will never stop screaming. But Lauren, how about you? Like, Joe and I haven't voluntarily eaten any bugs, have you?
Yes, I have. Well, actually, I guess voluntarily is a contentious term because one of my friends in college for some kind of world food class project made some cookies and brought them along with her one day when a bunch of us were hanging out and was like, "Hey, Lauren, have a cookie." And I was like, "Yum, cookies." And I ate one and she was like, "Haha, you just ate crickets." And I was like, "It was a delicious cookie. I don't." Okay. Like
so,
She was trying to gross me out, and it did not work at all.
Well, Lauren, the cow biter. It takes more than that to gross her out. Let me tell you, not a whole lot more. But no.
It was tasty. I mean, it was kind of a oatmealish texture to the cookie.
Gotcha.
And you know, I had assumed that it was like an oatmeal chocolate chip cookie, and yeah, it was just made with some good hearty cricket flour.
That'd be fine with the crickets, but ugh, oatmeal.
I think if you can dip it in ketchup, people will eat it.
Yeah.
Or put chocolate chips in it, people will eat it. So, you know, and you're negating some of the nutritional value at that point. To be fair, ketchup is still not a vegetable.
Let's ask Joe. I got a question for you then. All right,
yeah.
So let's say that someone has put down a plate in front of you. On the left is an in vitro grown burger. Like it's meat that's made from this in vitro process. So you've got the beef that's been lab grown on the left. On the right, you have a burger that's made from insect protein. And they ask you, they say that you have to choose one. Which one do you go for?
I guess I'd have to see what they looked like. I don't know. I have no inherent prejudice either way.
So.
But I guess that's not true. I would like to say that I wish I didn't have an inherent prejudice, but I'd probably go for the beef.
So you go with the lab-grown beef over the insect.
But I'd probably then I'd go back and try to talk myself into the insect burger.
Gotcha. Okay. Lauren, would you just indulge your voracious appetite for insects again, or would you?
I would ask if I could taste them both and see which one I liked better.
Yeah, see, I would immediately just cut each of them in half and then smush them together to make a mega burger, the likes of which have never been seen.
I don't
Here's the question.
That sounds bad.
If like you're about to eat your insect burger and a bug crawled across the plate, would you send it back?
Right, right. If you had a soup filled with insect protein and there was a fly in your soup, would that be garnish?
Waiter.
Oh, we're funny. You know, it's honestly, I don't have a problem with either one. If you were to bring me. Like, assuming that the insects have been prepared, I agree with you, Joe. I would have that same sort of initial reaction if someone just handed me a bug and said, eat this. I think I would definitely balk at that. But if you're talking about something that's been prepared in some way, either turned into a kind of meal and then, as in like cornmeal type thing, and then cooked, or even if you're talking about something where you've just, you know, you've removed the legs from the crickets and then done a quick stir fry type stuff. I've seen those too. I'd be willing to try that. I just have never really had the opportunity. And again, I think I would have to be on my own because if my wife ever saw me do that, I would probably end up being divorced because she has a severe phobia about insects. As for the lab grown beef, I wouldn't hesitate at all for that. Other than the fact that I can't afford it. I would have to.
Really? So you wouldn't have a problem with lab grown beef, even though you don't eat?
I would eat that. Yeah. Okay. I mean, a lot of the objections, first of all, the biggest reason why I don't eat beef is because my wife doesn't eat beef.
Right. Sure.
So I don't have an ethical issue with it. Although as I learned more and more, because when I stopped eating beef, it was before I was really knowledgeable at all about what was going on with the meat industry. Once I learned more and more about the environmental impacts, I was like, I guess it's a good thing I don't do it. I'm not contributing to that. That's one of the reasons why I, you know, don't just immediately try it again and go back into it. But if it was lab grown, I was thinking, well, you know, this was done in a way that didn't kill an animal. It didn't cause a negative environmental impact on the same level as conventionally grown beef. And I'm curious about it. I'd go ahead and try it. Now, I probably wouldn't feel so great afterward just from the fact that I haven't eaten that kind of protein in a really long time, but that's beside the point.
According to those estimates I came up with, and of course they are not I came up with, the in the paper I found,
right?
And they are just estimates, but I mean, in those predictions, the lab cultured beef was better even than chicken.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be willing to try that. Now, I don't know if my wife would, because again, she psychologically associates meat with not feeling good. And even though that happened when she was in college, I don't know that it necessarily matters where the meat came from for
the,
her.
The human drive to not poison yourself is a pretty strong one.
Fairly strong. It does always make me wonder, who was that poor, poor caveman who was given the job of, all right, eat that and find out if it kills you?
Chris, don't eat it.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you have anything else you want to talk about the future of protein before we wrap up?
I'm just going to say the future of food is going to be weirder than you can imagine.
Yeah, it's going to be delicious too, I imagine.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Eat all the things.
All right, with that, we're going to wrap up. Guys, if you have any suggestions, I recommend you go to fwthinking.com. That's our website where we've got all of the videos, we have the podcasts, we've got blog posts, we've got articles. Everything you would ever want when it comes to these kind of topics is all there. You can join in on the conversation. We look forward to hearing from you, and you will hear from us again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.